Find the book of Habakkuk. Another southern prophet, preacher that we're going to be reading from today. We're going to be talking about the heart of God's people for encounter, and encountering Him specifically. The encountering of God and how that drives us into a place of revival. You know, it was back around 2000, the year 2000, actually January of 2000, and as was my habit at that time, a particular amount of time in January was given to me just fasting and praying and really just seeking the face of God at that time, specifically in regards to where the youth ministry would go for the following year. And so one of the things that we are allowed to do here as staff is we are given days of refreshment or renewal, it's called. I took those days, and I took off from my other job. I was a full-time teacher at the time. And I found a hotel nearby and got a room for a few days, 3 days. And then I went and with the sole purpose of seeking the face of God. Just wanted to hear God speak to me. Now, that sounds strange, perhaps, but I do believe that, and particularly through these encounters that I've had, I'm all the more impressed that God desires this upon our lives and our hearts. And I want to emphasize again that I was not a full-time pastor at the time. I was a full-time teacher and took time, vacation time from my job to do this because I knew in my heart that I desired to pursue and to drive after, to strive, we heard in Hosea last week. Hosea chapter 6, verse 3 says, let us strive after God. This is what we're talking about. Taking the time to do so, okay, perhaps taking an expense to do so, and getting away and seeking the face of God. And in that time of encounter, I know I've shared this with you before, but you know, my mind and my heart and our lives, and this is before even cell phones were even a thing for me, you know, life is just going so quickly and so fast that you go into a time like that and your mind, your heart is just gang rushed with all kinds of thoughts and what has to be done and the urgency of life all around you. And it literally took about 24 hours for me to settle out and to really calm myself down, to actually stop and to hear what it is that God would speak to me. But it was a purposeful encounter, okay? It's something that I had purpose in my heart in many ways. And you see there in your notes that, you know, setting the time aside, setting aside all that encumbers me, and that includes sin that had to be confessed, and that includes I didn't have a family at that time, but, you know, I mean, I didn't have my family that I have now with Catherine and such, but I, you know, there were relationships that I had to set aside, and I had to do things. And that's all encumbering us, right? Things and life encumbers us. But setting that aside for those days and then seeing within myself a willingness to reflect deeply. Now, that's very key for today. Because if we're going to want, if we're going to seek out an encounter with God, we have to understand that we can set all the time aside, we can set all all the things of this life aside, and if we don't go into it with a heart to be transformed and to be renewed and to say, yes, Lord, I'm willing to hear what it is that you want to speak to me. If we come in here every Sunday and that's not our heart to hear, then we leave those opportunities for encounter and we are the same as when we came in. But in this particular occasion, because I had set the time aside, because I had set all that encumbers me aside, I did stress within myself the desire to hear what God's voice would say to me. And I desired that. I strove for that. And it was hard. And believe me, this is some of the hardest work that I do as a human being, is to quiet myself to hear. Sometimes, you know, we as pastors, I won't speak for Scott, but I know this as I said, I was at a pastor's conference just recently, and we were reflecting upon this. You know, sometimes it gets to the point in our pastoral lives that we feel like when we spend time here during the week or in our offices praying, we feel like we're leaving other things off that are maybe more urgent or more. No, this prayer time, that is the urgent work of a minister. And we can get all kinds of caught up, but if we don't stop and encounter God, man, I'm not doing you any favors. If all I do is sit in my office and study and look through and read and do all kinds of stuff that just like bolsters my brain power. If I don't encounter the living God on a week-by-week basis, I have nothing here to share it with you. And so on that particular day, I had set aside, and I did finally at one point, I actually picked up the Word. I spent most of that first day just not even reading the Word, because the Word, I know myself too well at that point. I know myself because I want more knowledge. I want to know more what's in here. So I could sit here and I could read the Bible and just add to my mind. But on these kind of days, I have to set that aside. The Word was there with me. I'd go to it at some point. But at that point, I know myself. I had to even break myself from that and just quiet my heart and just say, God, speak to me. And I think that's a good season sometimes. Maybe particularly for some of us who, you know, are quote-unquote in the business, right? We are paid to be in the Word. Well, sometimes you just need to settle down and just listen. And that day, it's the one time in my life I feel as though, as Habakkuk says, I think, as he expresses here in this, because there was a very clear as a bell rung in my ear, a very clear word from God. And my response to that was, you got to be kidding me. No way. That is not possible that you're saying that. So I just took that, I chalked that up as being just something in my own heart. And I stopped and thought about it. I was like, that came from nowhere. That was not a part of my heart. That was actually as far away from my mind and my heart as I could possibly ever. And so as I contemplated it and thought about what God was calling me to, my eyes were open, saying, this is the voice of God. And I can wrestle against it and push it away, or I can say, yeah, it's just a voice, my own voice. It's, you know, no. I have to stop and I have to receive what it is. And he was asking me to do something that was really, really difficult. It was really way out there. In a way, trudging up things that I didn't really want to go back into. And yet, as I've told you in weeks past, you have a choice on those moments. In these encounters, we have a choice. We can walk forward and do what we're asked to do. We can say yes to the prompting of the Spirit of God. And we can walk and we can progress into this thing we call revival, refreshment, renewal. Or we can say no and we can slip back into our old ways and just walk out of that encounter the same as I came in. Well, I had made a covenant with myself going into those things, into those times, that when I knew that the voice of the Lord was speaking to me, I would not hesitate. I would not say no. And so once I dealt with that and I realized that God was truly speaking, then I moved forward, and I believe that led me into a time of renewal and refreshment and revival. And I came out of those 3 days a much different person than when I went in. And God was preparing me there in that January of 2000 and preparing my heart and preparing my ways and preparing my discipline of life so that when I would meet this young lady right here a few months later, Catherine, It wasn't love at first sight or anything like that, but by the end, when God was showing me, this is to be your bride, then it was that refreshment spilled over into very real life. I'm going to say this. If you're seeking for wisdom, and you're seeking for understanding, and you're seeking for grace to be poured upon your life, then you have to say yes to what it is that God is speaking to you. So as we look at Habakkuk, I want us to look at this encountering as it looks to the people of God. As you know, this is a very strange book in a lot of ways. Most prophetic books, it would say right at the top, the prophet Habakkuk to the people of whatever, the oracle of the Lord, or such and such, and none of that is here. It says Habakkuk, and it doesn't give any task that he was given, because the task is actually interwoven in a prayer, a seeking out, a desire for encounter. I want us to remember some of the principles from last week. These are actually the three principles that we talked about. First of all, from the book of Hosea, it is God's heart, first of all, for me to return to Him. It is God's desire. And it's not something that I churn up in myself. Oh, I wish. No, it's God's desire first. And He has set everything in motion, and He has done everything possible to put me into that position where I can return to Him so that my heart is desiring Him. That's His work, and it's His greatest desire for you and for me to return to Him. And I'm not talking about, oh, you wayward souls or anything like that. I'm talking about today, wherever you're at. He desires for your heart to be strengthened towards Him. Number two, remember that it is God's heart for me to be revived and refreshed in Him. He's not looking for you to be stagnant, stinky, dragged down, desperate, and degraded. That's not His desire. His people are to be joy-filled followers after Him, right? And so His desire is to revive and refresh and to renew. And sometimes that comes with physical healing, but sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it comes with financial and emotional healing, but sometimes it doesn't. But nonetheless, He desires to renew and refresh. We're going to see that in Habakkuk. He's going to start out with a great and righteous concern. You're going to see how it turns into a complaint before God. Almost like I was telling the students here, almost like an argument with God a bit, right? A little Job-esque here, right? And then God kind of just shows Himself, and because Habakkuk is willing to hear and willing to say yes to the encounter with God, you see that despite the fact that the circumstances are not better, in fact, they're about to get really, really bad. But though the fig tree fails to blossom, and there's no fruit on the vine, yet will I praise Thee. Yes, Lord, I bless Thee. And You have set my feet as hinds' feet. And He gives them a place to stand. That's where we're going today. Because it's despite the circumstances that are around us, God says, I want to renew you. I want to refresh you. And I will do it in my own time, my own way. And yes, it can be me and you, Eric, despite all the surroundings around you, despite all the chaos around you, despite all the corruption around you, it can be me and you. And we'll encounter each other. And I can refresh you like that. And number three, it's God's heart for me to be intimately connected with Him. Sometimes we really think that we're in this somehow by ourselves. Despite whether you're sitting next to people in church today or not, sometimes you think you're kind of solo. But even more important than all the people that might be around you in this room is the fact that God has gone before you. God desires this, and He desires you. He desires an intimate connection with you. He desires an encounter with you, fresh and new. Like Lamentations says, new every morning, right? That's where we're at. That site is, that's, sometimes we think that revival is some big, and we talked about this a little bit last week, just this big event. And I've gone to the revival and I've been revived. But God's like, I want to do that for you every day. Actually, I want to do that for you continuously throughout the day. I want to revive and refresh you so that the springs of living water are flowing into you on a continual basis. And the only way that that will happen is by us saying, yes, yes, Lord, to your will and to your way, yes, Lord. I hear you, and I will obey, and I will walk forward in what you have called me to do. So if it's difficult, if it seems impossible, if it seems hard and out, and I've got to make it right with this person, I've got to walk down this road, I've got to do the difficult task, the answer is yes. That is what stirs us into revival. So, Father God, I would pray that today, that as we seek your face, as we run to you and strive, Lord God, that you would meet us, that you would encounter us, Lord God, and that we would encounter you, that you'd reveal yourself to us, and that you would illuminate our hearts. We set aside all that encumbers us today. I'd like for us just to have a few moments of just stillness and silence to make that request of the Lord real to your individual heart. That if you wish to encounter the Lord today, that you'll prepare your heart for what the Lord would say to you. Oh, Lord, that our hearts, and whatever it is that you would say to us today, that our heart's answer would be yes. Amen. If you look at Habakkuk chapter 1, and this is going to be a flyby, I've asked for you guys to be considering reading through these short books in preparation for the week or even in this week to come. Habakkuk is a short 3 chapters, and we're going to be just touching on a few different pieces of it. But I want really for you to see the progression that Habakkuk goes through to go from virtually a crying out and even going into a complaining heart towards God to really coming out as being a refreshed, revived man of God. And we're going to see these in progressive steps as we go through chapter 1, chapter 2, and chapter 3. So 3 steps, and it's a very generalized view for sure, but you will, I'm sure, as you go through it more closely. Originally, this entire series was going to be built upon the book of Habakkuk. And then I decided otherwise as the last couple months went by. But there's enough here in Habakkuk to really dig into deeply. So I know our small group did that a bit in the last months. I just encourage you, I challenge you to go back to know these minor prophet books and to hear the voice of the Lord as it would be spoken to you. But it's really important for us to see that Habakkuk, This Judean prophet, is being called to give at one point here an oracle to the nation and to the nations, to the heart of people that are hardened and our wandering, but let's listen to see how it starts out. I mean, Habakkuk doesn't take any time at all just to get into it. He says, "How long, Lord?" Hear yourself in this, church. "How long, Lord, must I call for help and you do not listen? Or cry out to you about violence and you do not save?" Now, that's two different sentences that are very, very... the first sentence could be very... It could go anywhere, right? "How long must I call out to you and you not hear me?" But the second sentence really narrows in what it is that he is calling out to. Don't miss this. This is not just Habakkuk saying, "God, I've been waiting around here and you won't say anything to me." No, it's very specific. It says, "How long will I call out to you about the violence and the corruption and all the chaos that's all around me here, and you will not listen to me? You will not hear me and you will not answer." Listen as it goes on. "Why do you force me to look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Oppression and violence are right in front of me. Strife is ongoing and conflict escalates. This is why the law is ineffective and justice never emerges. For the wicked restrict the neighbors. Therefore, justice comes out perverted." So here we have this man, this prophet of Judah, and he must be talking about Syria, right? Or he must be talking about Assyria. He must be talking about maybe Egypt, you know, these guys who are long into paganism and all this treacherous ways of living. No. Habakkuk is talking about his own community in Judah. Now, if you're tracking with me last week, Habakkuk is speaking at a time that's well before the Babylonian captivity. It's very important for you to understand the context here. He is looking at Judah, which is now the only remaining of the two, the north and the south. The north has been swept away by Assyria. And now Judah stands alone at this time, and he's looking around him, and he's seeing everything that the Proverbs talk about, all the oppression of the rich over the poor, all the corruption within government. The evil king, as opposed to the good king, is ruling. The corruption that is all around him is coming from his own people, the Jewish people. They are the ones that have, when he talks about the corruption and the injustice and the imbalance, he's talking about the balancing of scales. We hear about this a lot in Proverbs. What has happened is that the rich people, they control all aspects of measurement, and so that they are able to cheat out the poor guy who has no voice in government. He has no voice in the council, and so he cheats on the scales. And so when he's got something to spice or whatever it might be to put on the scales and he measures it out, he always does it to his own benefit, the rich man's benefit. This is perversion. This is injustice. And God speaks harshly about this throughout the Old Testament. This is an untruthfulness. Why does God go against stealing? Why does he say? Why does he speak in the Ten Commandments about the false witness or false testimony? Because God is a God of truth. He, in his very character, is truth. And therefore, anything of injustice and falsehood and perversion of truth is against God. Ever wonder why he tells us to do certain things? God only speaks to us to do what is already in his heart and in his character. A very easy one, and thou shalt not commit adultery. We could see that in Hosea, right? God was a truthful, faithful creature. Not creature, but a being. He himself, being truthful and faithful, demands that of his people. In this case, God's heart cries out against corruption, and so does Habakkuk. It seems like a very righteous thing, and it is. It's a righteous prayer. "How long, O Lord, will you not hear me as I've cried out about everything?" You hear yourself in this? Is this not the community that we live in? All around us, right? Here we are as righteous people, and we see the abortions, and we see the corruption, and we see the stealing from government over people. We see just left and right. We see all of this. And it seems to be mounting up and coming on in stronger and stronger manner. And Habakkuk says, how long? How long can I possibly cry out to you and you not hear me? Well, God's response is fairly immediate. God answers and he says, look to the nations and observe. Be utterly astounded, for something is taking place in the days, in your days, that you will not believe when you hear about it. Look, I'm raising up the Chaldeans, that bitter, impetuous nation that marches across the earth's open spaces and sees territories not its own. They are fierce and terrifying, and their views of justice and sovereignty stem from themselves. Now, you can keep on, but I think you can see where this is going. The Chaldeans, we're talking about the Babylonians. This is borderline comical, because Habakkuk, this nice Jewish guy, is looking at his Jewish community and saying, God, why are you allowing this? And God says, hold on, I've got this in hand. I'm going to do something amazing. I'm going to do something you would never even believe. I'm going to take those guys, the Babylonians, who are really horrible people. He kind of gives a nice little litany here. Takes land that's not their own. They're horrible people. They're pagans, believing in all kinds of other gods. They're treacherous and horrifying people. They're terrifying. I'm going to use them to bring justice back to my people. Not the answer, I don't think, that Habakkuk was looking for, right? But sovereign God looks at the entire picture. And he says, his people, and he says, I want you. And I am desperate to grab a hold of your hearts. I want you to return to me. And Habakkuk, I'm going to do something astounding, unbelievable in your midst. I'm going to go so far out on this one. I'm going to take this tool of mine called Babylon to bring you back to me. Habakkuk's answer is priceless. But in the meantime, we have to understand that one of the main things that happens here in Habakkuk is that Habakkuk has to reflect. When God speaks this, he has to stop. And all the chaos and corruption around him starts to fade away because he has to start to reflect upon himself. He has to stop and see that God is not just speaking in general terms. He's very, very specifically saying, I want you, Habakkuk. I want your people. I want my land. I want my people back, yes. But I want you. And so Habakkuk has to stop. As much as he's been reflecting on all that's around him, now all of a sudden he has to reflect upon the grace of God and the truth and the justice of God. Habakkuk, how do you stack up to the righteousness of God? Because Habakkuk's immediate response is, no, God, that cannot possibly be right. And God's answer is, if I say it's right, it's right. If I say I'm going to use it, I'm going to use it. There's nothing you can say that's going to stop it. I'm just letting you in on what I'm about to do. And his heart is starting to sway. He can't understand. And he starts to reflect. We can't just reflect on the things outside of us. We look inwardly. And Habakkuk has got a decision to make here. He can put on all of his piousness. He can put on all the pretenses, all the religiosity, and he can smile and say, hey, whatever, God, that sounds great. Yeah, you're the God. Go for it. Or he can be real. See, if we are true in our reflection of ourselves, we have to come out. We have to speak truth as well. Habakkuk was not okay with this. And instead of putting on all the religiosity and all the phoniness that so many do at so many times when we're encountering God, he decides to be real. And he says, "Oh God, yeah, you're a great God. You're from everlasting," verse 12. "Yahweh, my God, my Holy One, you will not die." And he goes on. He's exalting and glorifying the Lord. He's like, "This is true. And your eyes are too pure to look on evil," verse 13. "And you have made mankind like fish of the sea," verse 14. And then he says, verse 15, "The Chaldeans pull them all up with a hook." He starts going at the main point. He's like, "Wait a minute. You are God, you are righteous, you are all these things, but these guys, Chaldeans, the Babylonians, they're not the right tool for you to use. These guys are horrible." And he starts to give out their wrongdoings, their false sacrifices, their wrong living. And God's like, "You know what? That's true. That's absolutely true." He's not standing up and saying, "Oh, the Chaldeans are my people now." No, in fact, he says just the opposite. The next chapter, he's going to go into a whole oracle about the unrighteousness. But he says, "You know what? When I say that I'm going to use this tool to do my bidding, so may it be. I will do what I choose to do." But Habakkuk's having a problem here. He's like, So I know we're evil. I know Judah has got some problems. But how in the world could you find it within your heart? You, the righteous God, my Yahweh. How in the world could you, in your chesed love for your own people, turn on us like this? And so God's got to have some more words. And chapter 2 starts out with some waiting. And so we look at the first step of progress is that real revival encounter needs to be preceded by an honest reflection. As he is opened and he has not put on pretense and he has spoken out his mindset, that sets him up not to be right and God wrong, not by any means, never going to happen. But it does place us into a situation where we are exactly exposed, exactly what we're thinking. There's no reason for us to put on pretense with God. And when I say that, I hope you understand what I'm saying. There's no phoniness that God can't see through. There's no lie that he can't put truth up against and say, "You know what? That's incorrect." There's nothing that we can have more righteousness in than the righteous God of all eternity. So we might as well be open with our mind and our heart. If this is a problem for you, Habakkuk, I'm glad that you're willing to bring it to me. Do you notice that God does not put him down? He says, "How dare you question me?" Never. This whole book, you look in Job, same concept. You know, he says, "Where were you?" I get that. But he never like puts them down and says, "How could you possibly question me?" God's not like that. He's big enough for my questions. He's big enough for my indignation, even if it's kind of lesser than his own righteousness, right? He's bigger than that. So I might as well be honest and reflect correctly. That's step number one. Come to him and be honest and be open and let yourself be reflected upon by the very righteousness of God. That will lead us to step two that we see in chapter 2. A revival encounter will deepen faith and will deepen desire. Chapter 2 starts this way. "I will stand at my guard post and station myself on the outlook tower. I will watch to see what he will say to me and what I should reply about my complaint." Do you hear in this a striving heart, a desiring He's not okay with what God is saying. But he's going to wait. And he's going to listen. And he's going to be willing to hear the hard truth that's going to come from God next. Now, he's put up his complaint. He said what is. He has exposed himself and been honest. And now he's waiting. But he's not waiting with a chip on his shoulder, like, I'm waiting, God, whatever. No, he is anticipating. He says he's up on the watchtower looking out, waiting to see what it is that God would say to him next. And if you want to have a revival in your heart, number one, you have to reflect honestly. But number two, you have to wait earnestly. You have to strive after him. Desire starts to build up in here. And as Henry Blackaby would say, nobody leaves an encounter with God unchanged. You look through the entire Old Testament, through the entire New Testament, anybody, everybody who touches an encounter with God is changed. The ground either opens up and swallows them, or they are turned wholeheartedly in worship. Fire may come down and destroy them because they're rebellious and their answer is no, no, no. Or they have an encounter that will go down for the ages. Fire coming from heaven to burn up the sacrifice on Mount Carmel. No encounter in the Bible is ever leaves somebody the same. God is a transformative God. He's going to transform those he encounters. So ask yourself, look back upon your last year of life, and just ask yourself, you know, what transformation have you allowed God to do? If the answer is you look back a year ago and you say, you know, I see myself as pretty stagnant right now. I'm kind of just on this plateau. God is like, that's not what my hope is for you. My hope is to revive you. My hope is to renew you. My hope is to drive you to deeper. My hope is to do in you what I've been doing for ages and ages, to transform you from glory to glory. There's no stagnancy there. Tomorrow you wake up and there's a new glory to be found and to be revived and to be restored in. I don't think I'm just sitting here pie in the sky. I don't think so. In fact, you know, Christianity lives and grows and thrives because of its willingness to be revived on an ongoing basis. The great men of faith, they woke up to be revived and renewed daily. Hours of prayer and such. And maybe that's not what God's calling you to. I'm not suggesting that's for everybody. But there is something to be said, that there is a revival to be had within our lives. And if you are not looking back a year ago and saying, you know what, God has been so graceful, and he has guided me and directed me, and he has brought me to new refreshment in him, then I'm not sitting here in condemnation of you. I'm asking you, will you not have more? Will you not say yes to the very thing that God has asked you to? He desires this for you. And so we find ourselves in this encounter with a deepened faith, a deeper drive to be in the Word, a deeper drive to be in prayer, a deeper sense of who he is in my life. Throughout this chapter, we don't have time to settle in upon it too much here, but chapter 2, you see that God enriches the faith of those desiring righteousness. In verse 1, he will say to me, and what should I reply in my complaint? Later on down in verse 4, the second part of that says, but the righteous one will live by his faith. This is a reflection that is going to be quoted later on in the New Testament, the righteous will live by faith. I think you could probably, some of you can come up with probably about three different times, and this has been quoted by Paul and in Hebrews, twice by Paul, once in Hebrews. The righteous shall live by faith. What's he talking about? Well, there's all this chaos all around me, God. There's all this, God's own people, it seems like they're kind of just like fading away and falling left and right, but God wants to revive me. He wants to revive his people, and I say yes. And in that, he strengthens my faith. He builds my faith. He deepens my desire for him, and he causes me to charge forward and walk into this newness that he has waiting for me. And finally, in chapter 2, look at verse 14. An encounter with God deepens our understanding of worship. For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the Lord's glory as the waters cover the sea. We sing that song every once in a while. The glory of the Lord covers this earth. Isn't that amazing? In the midst of this chaos, in the midst of all this seemingly distracting news from God, Habakkuk comes to a place that in striving after God, he finds himself in worship of God. He finds himself seeing the glory of the Lord like perhaps he's never seen before. He sees it covering the earth, and the people of God's heart are seen worshiping. Filled with the knowledge of the Lord is the same words we saw in Hosea last week. Let us strive. Let us strive for the knowledge of God. This is that intimacy we're talking about. We're not talking about knowledge here. We're talking about knowledge from head to heart and how it builds in us and it grows in us and it grows us to this intimacy with our God. And for some, you've held off the intimacy of God just through your own actions and your own sin life that you've just held on to. And you refuse to make it right, and so you're like, what are you talking about? I have no desire for this. Check your heart. Reflect. Don't forget the reflection part. You have to reflect upon the great glory of God and then allow that to shine into us and say, Lord, in all honesty, I'm not there and I wish to be. Are you tired of not being refreshed? Are you tired of just walking through life in the doldrums? I'm not talking to all of you, but I'm just talking about to some who have pushed it off and have just decided to walk this way. Are you tired? Doesn't it get you just down from day to day? Child of the King, he desires more for you. He desires you to walk in freshness and revival and enlightenment. And then verse 20, right at the end of that chapter, this worship of Habakkuk. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let everyone on earth be silent in his presence. There's a worshipful reverence that falls upon a person who is about to enter into revival. He's been reflective upon himself. He's heard from the Lord, and he's saying, yes, 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 whatever it is that you have for me, yes, change me, do this. I don't understand it, Lord. This is complex and it's difficult for me to understand. It hurts my heart to think about us having to go through that in order to get him back to you. But I say yes. If that's your heart, then I say yes. And I will praise you. And I will glorify you. I see you in this glory that covers us. Now I fall silent and reverent before you, O God. And what a treat he's in for as we go into the third step. Revival encounter transforms our prayers of unseen and hopelessness and faithlessness into prayers of visionary anticipation, adoration, and joy-filled exaltation. This may be one of my favorite pieces of scripture in the entirety. Because it takes reality, all the reality that's around us, a failing body, a failing government, a failing society, a corruption that just seems to be exuding itself upon everything, a lust for power, a lust for everything that is ungodly, unholy. It's all out there, all this is all the surroundings, and it points back to me and says, God, it's you and me. This intimate encounter is for the two of us. Let everything else go. Right now, it's the two of us. And God says, that's where I want you. Stop being so torn apart by all this stuff that's going on around you and focus yourself upon me. We just sang that song, Jesus at the center of it all, right? Be careful what you sing if it's not in your heart. Jesus at the center of it all. From beginning to the end, it's Jesus. Jesus, revive me. This is the only way into revival. And this prayerfulness, this thing that starts out as being a prayer of just complaint and God, when will you hear me? Listen to how it ends up here. This is beautiful. In chapter 3, it's worth a read through, but we'll just touch upon some things. Here's the prayer of Habakkuk the prophet according to this song. Lord, I have heard the report about you. Lord, I stand in awe of your deeds. The testimony of God's greatness is all around him. Lord, I heard the report about you. And I stand in awe of everything you have done in your creation, in the way that you have moved through history and time. I am in awe of your greatness, in the way that you have sent your own Son to die upon this cross for the removal of my sin. I stand in awe. Revive your work in these years. Do it now. What you have done in the past and all this stuff that I've seen you do, oh, you did it for Lottie Moon. Do it for me. Do it here in this time. Do it here in this church. Revive us, oh God. Your mighty power has been seen and known, and we preach about it, and we hear about it, and we pray for it. Do it here among us. You see how the desire of this man has gone from a complaining heart to being, God, I have heard what you can do. I worship you. I reverence you because you alone can do it. And I've heard, and I'm asking you. Revive that work in our years, right now, Lord. Make it known in these years and in your wrath, remember mercy. It's beautiful. It's this poetic prayer that he puts out here. He is settled into the reality that God is about to do something that he did not anticipate when the prayer time started. He is going to use this pagan, horrific, terrifying Babylon to bring his people back into order. But God, I ask that in my days, in this time, that in your wrath, in your righteous judgment, you remember mercy. Because as much as you are righteous, you are merciful. And you have shown those works in our lives too, has he not? He is not a wrathful God that just puts you down. In his wrath, He remembers mercy. What a glorious statement that is. And then he goes on. Verse 18, I heard and I trembled within. My lips quivered at the sound. Rottenness entered my bones. I trembled where I stood. Now I must quietly wait for the day of distress. He's talking about Babylon coming. He knows it's coming. To come against the people invading us. And then listen to 17. Though the fig tree does not bud, and there's no fruit on the vines, even though everything with my eyes says chaos and corruption are everywhere, even though everything I see suggests that we are in a bad spiral downward. That's what the fig tree represents, right? Figs and olives. That's what Israel is all about. It's the fruitfulness of the vine, the grapes, the olive. Though the olive crop fails, when that happens, it's bad news. It's hard to keep an olive tree down. But when it happens, man, it means that there is some serious, serious drought. There's a bad time. And I saw olive trees everywhere, right? I called them my little friends. I love olive trees. They are the sweetest looking things. And they represent life and fruitfulness and lushness. It's difficult not to see that. You go through an olive grove with hundreds and hundreds of these beautiful, I don't know, there's something about it. I just love olive trees. And I would gush every time I'd see them. They were everywhere. And I was just like, hey, there's one of my friends. I sound stupid, I know. But I'm just saying, olive trees are phenomenal little pieces of creation. And God has used them in His land, in the Holy Land, to symbolize and signify fruitfulness and just a, it's also like peace and prosperity and all that. And though the olive crop fails, and the fields produce no food, though there's no sheep in the pen and no cattle in the stalls, yet I will triumph in Yahweh, and I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. Joy is expressed beyond the immediate circumstances of my life. Though the fig tree fails to blossom, there's no fruit on the vine. Though the olive bears no fruit, and the harvest is yielding nothing. There's no sheep in the pen. There's no cattle out there. There's nothing for me to see with my eyes. Thus, yet, in the midst of that, I will bless you. Your joy and the revival of your soul does not get dictated to by the surrounding circumstances of your life. You hear that? There are a lot of extenuating circumstances in our lives. Health, emotions, relationships, all these things, they do not dictate your joy. It's hard to see. It's hard to sometimes computate within my heart. But truth is truth. Joy is despite the fig tree not bearing fruit, the olive tree withering and failing, the lack of sustenance of any kind. It's despite that. Thus, yet, will I bless thee. And then he is allowed to stand firmly. Verse 19 is a great ending verse for this entire thing. Yahweh, my Lord, is my strength. He makes my feet like those of a deer and enables me to walk on mountain heights. Blessed be the Lord. Anna and I, just the one last little look at Israel. When we were in En Gedi, some ladies were looking out over this ridge, and they pointed out these little deer barren. I showed you the barren wasteland that we're talking about. And Gedi was just a little strip, right? But off to the right, just barren wasteland. And these little deer scampering up, a whole little herd of them scampering up. You hear the rocks falling out because their feet are slipping, and but they're making their way up, and you hear the rocks crashing down all around them. They make it up there safely. That's the deer he's talking about. Their feet are so certain. They will not slip. They don't fall. You never see these guys falling down the cliffs, no matter how much the rocks are falling all around them. He says, my feet are like hinds' feet. They will not slip, and I will stand. The men would come. In this time, we're going to have Brianna come, and we have a song for us to contemplate what it is that God is speaking to us. But the men will then serve the Lord's Supper here in a moment. You guys just wait just for a bit. Challenge to the church is, how have I prepared myself for revival? What steps do I have to take to enjoy this encountering of God? Time to stop and set aside some time, maybe even some finances, some way of getting away, to be silent before God, to bear your heart before Him and be honest about these things, to reflect upon yourself, what God would be speaking to you. Is it time? Is this the way that you can bring a revival back into your heart, to become men and women of prayer in a deeper, deeper fashion? What will it take for us to encounter this God? Because He wants this for us so much so.